Osho, The Grass Grows by Itself, talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 4.
Bhagwan, Confucius was looking at the cataract at Luleng. It falls from a height of 200 feet, and its foam reaches 15 miles away. No scaly, finny creature could survive therein. Yet Confucius saw an old man go in. Thinking the old man was suffering from some trouble, and was therefore desirous of ending his life, Confucius bade a disciple run along the bank to try to save him. The old man emerged about 100 paces off, and with flowing hair, he went caroling along the bank. Confucius followed him, and when he caught up to him, he said, "I had thought, sir, you were a spirit, but now I see you are a man. Kindly tell me, is there any way to deal thus with the water?" "No," replied the man, "I have no way. Plunging in with a whirl, I come out with a swirl. I accommodate myself to the water, not the water to me. And so I am able to deal with it after this fashion."
You have 1001 problems, and you try to solve them. Not even a single problem is solved. It cannot be solved, because in the first place, there are not 1001 problems. There is only one. And if you see 1001 problems, you will not be able to see the one that really is. You go on seeing things which are not. And because of that, you miss to see that which is. So the first thing to be understood is the basic, the only one problem. It is perennial. It doesn't in particular belong to you or to me or to somebody else. It belongs to men as such. It is born with you. And unfortunately, as the situation is with millions of people, the problem will die with them. If the problem can die before you die, you have become enlightened. And the whole effort of religion is how to help you to dissolve the problem before it has killed you completely. There is a possibility of a man without any problems, and that is the religious man. He has no problems, because he has solved the basic problem. The root he has cut. That's why Tilopa says, cut the root of the mind. Don't go on cutting the leaves and the branches. There are millions. And by cutting them, you will not be able to cut the root. And the tree will go on. And the tree will become even denser and thicker and bigger if you go on pruning the leaves. Simply forget about the leaves. They are not the problems. The problem is somewhere in the root. Cut the root and the tree by and by disappears, withers away. So where is the root problem of the mind? It is neither yours nor anybody else. It belongs to man as such. It comes into existence the moment you are born, but it can dissolve before you die. A child is born. Follow me step by step. Because if you can understand the problem rightly, it is solved immediately. Because the problem carries its own solution within it. The problem is like a seed, and the solution is like a flower that is hidden in the seed. If you can understand the seed correctly, totally, the solution is already there. To solve a problem, in fact, is not to solve it, but to understand it. The solution is not external to it. It is intrinsic. It is hidden in it. So don't look for solutions. Just look deeper in the problem. Find the root. In fact, there is no need to cut. Once you have understood it, the very understanding becomes the cutting of the root. So follow me step by step how the problem is born. Don't be concerned with the solution. That's how philosophy arises in the world. The problem is there. The mind starts to find some solution. Philosophy arises. The problem is there. The mind tries to understand it. Religion is born. A child is born. A child is absolutely helpless, particularly human child. He cannot survive without others' help. So this is the first thing. No problem exists for animals and trees and birds. They live a non-problematic life. They simply live without any problems, anxiety, ulcers, cancer. They simply live and enjoy and celebrate the moment while they are. They have no problem in their life and they have no problem in their death. They live a non-problematic existence. Because only human child is born helpless. All other children, animals, trees, birds, they can survive without the parents. They can survive without society. They can survive without a family. Or even if sometimes the help is needed, it is very little, few days. At the most, few months. But a human child is so helpless, for years he has to depend. And from there the root has to be cut. Why helplessness creates the human problem? The child is helpless, he depends on others, but the ignorant mind of the child interprets this dependence on others as if he is the center of the whole world. The child thinks that whenever I cry, the mother runs immediately. Whenever I am hungry, just the indication and the breast is given. Whenever I am wet, just a slight crying, weeping, and somebody comes and changes the clothes. The child lives like an emperor. In fact, he is absolutely helpless and dependent. And the mother and the father and the family, they are all helping him to survive. They are not dependent on the child. The child is dependent on them. But the ignorant mind of the child interprets as if he is the center of the whole world. The whole world exists for him. And the whole world is very small, of course, in the beginning, the mother. On the fringe, the father. This is the whole world. And they both love the child. The child becomes more and more egoistic. The child feels himself to be the very center of all existence. The ego is created. Through dependence, helplessness, the ego is created. In fact, the situation is just the contrary. There is no reason to create the ego. But the child is absolutely ignorant. And the child is not capable to understand the complexity of the thing. He cannot feel he is helpless. He feels he is the dictator. And then whole life he will try to remain the dictator. He will become a Napoleon, an Alexander, an Adolf Hitler. Your presidents, prime ministers, dictators are all childish. They are trying the same. They want they should be the center of the whole existence. With them the world should live, with them the world should die. The whole world is their periphery. And they are the meaning of it. The very meaning of life is hidden in them. And the child, of course, naturally finds this interpretation correct. Because when the mother looks at him, in the eyes of the mother, he feels that he is the significance of her life. When the father comes home, he feels that he is the meaning of the very life of the father. For 3-4 years, and the 4 years of the beginning of life are the most important. Never again such potential time will be there in life. Psychologists say the first 4 years and the child is almost complete. The whole pattern is fixed. Then whole life he will repeat the same pattern in different situations. But the pattern is there already, complete. By the 7th year, the child is perfect. Now nothing else is going to happen to him. He has all the attitudes confirmed, the ego settled. Now he moves into the world. And everywhere there will be problems, millions of problems. And he carries the root within him. Once out of the circle of the family, problems will arise. Because nobody bothers as your mother bothered about you. Nobody is concerned as your father was concerned with you. Total indifference. The ego is hurt. But now the pattern is set. Whether hurt or not, the child cannot change the pattern. It has become the very blueprint of his being. He will play with other children and try to dominate. He will go to the school and try to dominate, try to come first in the class, to become the most important man. And he believes he is the superior most. But other children are also believe the same way. There is conflict. egos in fight, struggle, then this becomes the whole story of the life. Millions of egos around you, just like yours. And everybody trying to control, maneuver, domineer, throw wealth, power, politics, knowledge, strength, lies, pretensions, hypocrisies, even religion, morality. And everybody is trying to dominate, to show to the whole world that I am the center. And this is the root of all problems. Because of this concept, you are always in conflict and struggle with somebody or other. Not that others are enemies to you. Everybody is just like you, in the same boat. The same is the plight of everybody else. They have been brought up in the same way. There is a certain school of psychoanalysts in the West who have proposed that unless children are brought up without their father and mother, the world will never be at peace. I don't support them, because then they will never be brought up in any way. But they have something of truth in their proposal, very dangerous proposal. Because children can be brought up in nurseries without fathers and mothers, without any love, with total indifference. They will not have the problem of the ego. They will have some other problems. And in the same way dangerous, even more. If a child is brought up in total indifference, he will have no center in him. He will be a hodgepodge being, a clumsy, not knowing who he is. He will not have any identity. Afraid, scared. He will not be able to take even a single step without fear, because nobody loved him. Of course, the ego will not be there. But without the ego, he will have no center. He will not become a Buddha. He will be just a dull, inferior being, a stupid, and always feeling afraid. Love is needed to fill you, to make you feel fearless, that you are accepted, that somebody loves you, that you are not useless, that you cannot be discarded in the junkyard. If children are brought up in such a situation where the love is lacking, they will not have egos, that's right. Their life will not have so much struggle and fight. They will not be able to fight at all, but they will be always in flight, escaping. Escaping from everybody, hiding into caves in their own being. They will not be Buddhas. They will not be radiant with vitality. They will not be centered at ease at home. They will simply be eccentric, off-center. That will not be a good situation either. So I don't support those psychoanalysts. They will create robots, not human beings. Robots, of course, have no problems. They may create human beings like animals, there will be less anxiety, less ulcers, less cancer. But that is not worth achieving. You are not growing to a higher peak of consciousness. You are falling downwards. It is a regression. Of course, if you become an animal, there will be less anguish because there will be less consciousness. And if you become a stone, a rock, there will be no anxiety at all because there is nobody inside to feel anxious, to feel anguish. But this is not worth achieving. One has to be God-like, not rock-like. And the meaning of the word God is this: to have absolute consciousness and still have no worries, no anxieties, no problems. To enjoy life like birds and to have a consciousness absolutely perfect. Celebrating life like birds, singing like birds, but not by regression, but by growing to the optimum of consciousness. The child gathers ego. It is natural. Nothing can be done about it. I accept it. Only later on there is no need to carry it. That ego is needed in the beginning for the child to feel that he is accepted, loved, welcomed. He is a guest, not uninvited. Invited. The father, the mother, the family, the warmth around helps him to grow strong, rooted, grounded. It is needed. The ego gives him a protection. It is good. It is just like the cell of a seed. But the cell should not become the ultimate thing. Otherwise the seed will die. The protection can become too much. Then it becomes a prison. The protection must remain a protection. And when the moment comes for the cell, hard cell of the seed to die into the earth, it should die naturally so that the seed can sprout and the life can be born. The ego is just a protective cell. The child needs it because he is helpless. The child needs it because he is weak. The child needs it because he is vulnerable. And there are millions of forces all around. He needs a protection, a home, a base. The whole world may be indifferent, but he can always look towards the home. And from there he can gather significance. But with significance comes the ego. He becomes egoistic. And with this ego arises all the problems, the 1001 problems. This ego will not allow you to fall in love, and millions of problems will arise in your life. This ego would like everybody to surrender to you. This ego will not allow you to surrender to anybody. And love happens only when you surrender. When you force somebody to surrender, it is hate, destruction. It is not love. And if there is not love, your life will be without warmth, without any poetry in it. It may be a plain prose, mathematical, logical, rational. But how one can live without poetry? Prose is okay, utilitarian. is needed, but it can never be life, because it can be never be a celebration. It can never be festive. And when life is not festive, it is boredom. Poetry is needed, but for poetry you need surrender. You need to throw this ego. Even for moments, if you can do it, to put it aside, your life will have glimpses of the beautiful, of the divine. Without poetry you cannot really live. You can only exist. Love is the poetry. And if love is not possible, how can you pray? Then pray becomes almost impossible. And without prayer you will remain just a body. You will never become aware of the innermost soul. Only in prayer you reach to the peaks. The prayer is the highest peak of experience. Love opens the door. Prayer allows you into the innermost mystery of life. Then you cannot pray. Then millions of problems arise. Carl Gustav Jung, after his whole life of thousands cases, people ill psychologically, defective psychologically, confused thousands of people, he studied. And in the last, in his testament, he says that after the 40th year, I have never come across a psychologically ill person whose real problem is not religion. After the 40th year, it is just like after the 14th year, every boy, every girl will have to tackle sex, and there will be problems. And if you wrongly tackle, then those problems will continue hovering around you. Exactly the same as sex becomes mature at the age of 14, a new dimension opens at the age of 42. Because every 7 years there are biological, psychological, spiritual changes in your being. Every 7 years. The childhood is finished by the 7th year. By the 14th, the adolescence is gone. By the 25th, 21st, there are changes. Every 7th year, there is a rhythm in life. By the year 42nd, a new dimension arises, the dimension of prayer, the religious dimension. And if you cannot tackle it rightly, if you don't know what to do, you will be ill. You will lose all rest, you will become restless. But if you cannot love at the age of 14, you will not be able to pray at the age of 42. You have been missing, and the whole growth is a continuity. If you step one, if you miss one step, it becomes discontinuous. The child gathers ego, he cannot love, and he cannot be at ease with anybody. The ego is constantly in fight. You may be sitting silently, but the ego is constantly in fight, just looking, watching how to dominate, how to become dictatorial, how to become the most supreme, most person in the world. This creates problems everywhere. Friendship, sex, prayer, love, society. Everywhere you are in conflict. Even with parents who have given this ego to you, the conflict. It is rarely that a son forgives his father. Rarely. That a woman forgives her mother. Rarely. Gurdjieff had a sentence written in his room where you used to see the people. It is simply unbelievable why a man like Gurdjieff should write such a simple sentence on the wall. The sentence was this, that if you are not yet at ease with your father and mother, then go away. I cannot help you. Why? Because the problem has arisen there. It has to be solved there. That's why all the old Eastern traditions say, love your father, respect your father as deeply as possible. Because the ego arises there, that is the soil. Solve it there, otherwise it will haunt you everywhere. Now psychoanalysts also have stumbled upon the fact. All that psychoanalysis does is, it brings you back to the problems that existed between you and your parents and tries to solve it somehow. If you can solve your conflict with your parents, many other conflicts will simply disappear because they are based with the basic conflict. For example, a man who is not at ease with his father cannot believe in God, because God is a father figure, the father of the whole. A man who is not at ease with his father cannot be at ease with the boss in the office, never, because he is the father figure. A man who is not at ease with his father cannot be at ease with his master or guru, because he is a father figure. That is, small conflict with your parents continues to be reflected in all your relationships. If you are not at ease with your mother, you cannot be at ease with your wife, because she will be the representative woman. And you cannot be at ease with women as such, because the mother is the first woman. She is the first model of a woman. If you hate your mother, or you have a certain conflict in your mind, if you cannot be with your mother for a long time, you feel bored and you want to escape, you will not feel at ease with any woman in the world. Because wherever a woman is, your mother is. And a subtle relationship continues. In India, in the ancient days, in the days of Upanishads, whenever a newly married couple will come to an enlightenment to be blessed, the blessing was this. The enlightenment used to bless couples that you should become father and mother of 10 child. And to the woman he will say that let it be remembered that unless your husband becomes your 11th child, the marriage is not complete. Why? Why husband should become the 11th child? Otherwise the marriage is not complete. This is the reason that if the man has come to terms with his mother, finally he will find the mother again in his wife. A man remains a child, and a woman is a born mother. So the ultimate flowering of a woman is to become a mother of the whole. That's why I call my sannyasins ma, mothers. And the ultimate peak of a man is to become childlike, innocent again, like a child. And the whole world and existence becomes the mother. This is the intrinsic potentiality. But one has to come to terms with the father and mother. Ego is born there, it has to be tackled there. Otherwise you will go on cutting branches and roots and leaves, and the root remains untouched. If you have settled with your father and mother, you have become mature. Now there is no ego. Now you understand things that you were helpless. Now you understand that you depended. You were not the center of the world. In fact, you were completely dependent. You could not have survived. Understanding this, the ego by and by fades. And once you are not in conflict with life, you become loose and natural. You relax. Then you float. Then the world is not filled with enemies. It is a family, an organic unity, and the world is not against you. And you can float with it. And that is the meaning of this small parable. This is a parable used by Zen and Taoists. And I must tell you a few things before I enter into it. Taoists and Zen people have always joked about Confucius. This is in fact a joke. Because Confucius to them is the pinnacle of the legal mind. Confucius is the very paradigm of ego. Subtle, polished, cultured. The whole Confucian philosophy is how to polish your ego in such a way that you retain it without being in conflict with others. And that is what a cultured man is. A cultured man is not humble. No, never. A cultured man is a very subtle egoist. But he is very cunning, clever. He will not bring his ego in any relationship. He will hide it. And he will try to show that he is very humble. He will smile and bow down. And you can see well that this is just diplomatic. To live in the world, Confucius says, you have to exist with other egos. You should be very, very intelligent how you behave. Otherwise, unnecessary troubles are created. So Confucius has 3,300 rules how a man should behave. Each step he has rules how he should dress, and try to see the difference between Tao, Zen and Confucius mind, because that is how all over the world the distinction has existed. The moralist is different from the religious man. Difference is very subtle. A moralist tries to be humble. A religious man is humble. A moralist poses humility all around him. It is a pose. It is a gesture, cultivated. A religious person is simply humble. It is not a pose. Finding that the ego is nonsense, finding that the ego has no grounds to exist, finding that the ego is just a childish dream, misconceived in ignorance, the religious man simply becomes egoless. Finding no ground for the ego evaporates. Not that he becomes humble, no. He simply becomes egoless. How can he become humble when there is no ego? Only ego can become humble. Who will become humble? He simply comes to know that he is not. He is just part of this vast organic universe. He is not separate. So who is going to be egoist and who is going to be humble? He is not. He simply finds there is nothing like a center in him. The center is in the universe. He is part of it. Religious people have said that if there is a God, only he can be permitted to use the word I. Nobody else should use the word I. Because only one center is there in existence. There cannot be millions of centers. Because there are not millions of universes, only one universe. So if there is a center, there can be only one center. We all participate in it. But we cannot claim that center in ourselves. That's why Zen says, be a no-self, not humble. Because humility is the trick of the ego. It is the polished ego, not vulgar. So there are two types of ego. The vulgar ego you will find in the uncultured, uncivilized, uneducated person. Then there is a cultured ego, refined, polished, perfumed, very subtle. You cannot detect it. Always posing humility, humbleness, simplicity. And these are all postures. Confucius is the paradigm of the civilized man. And he believes in civilization. And he says rules have to be followed. Strict discipline has to be imposed. Because life is a struggle. And don't provoke anybody unnecessarily. Conserve your energy, because you will need it in some fight. So don't go on fighting with everybody, because that is unnecessary. Conserve energy. And when really there is a need, then you can fight. But that fight should be very cultivated and cultured. How to sit and how to stand, Confucius has rules for it. How to move, how to behave, because millions of egos are there and you have to find your path through this vast jungle of egos. And if you want to reach the goal, Don't be unnecessarily in conflict with each and everybody. Just passing, pass in such a humble way that nobody hinders you. So this humility is a diplomacy. It is political, not religious. Confucius is not a religious man at all. Because of Confucius, China could fall a victim to communism. Because Confucius has remained the central force in China. Many people ask me how it happened that such a religious country like China could fall a victim to communism, to an absolutely materialistic philosophy. It is not an accident. Buddha entered China, the teaching. Lao Tzu lived there. Chuang Tzu lived there, but they never could become the central force. The central force has remained Confucius. And Confucius and Marx are fellow travelers. There is no problem. It is difficult for India to become communist. It was very, very easy for China to become communist. And so suddenly, and so easily, because the Confucian trend is absolutely political, diplomatic, material. Zen and Taoist have always laughed about Confucius. And this is their one of subtle jokes. Try to understand this. Confucius was looking at the cataract at Luoyang. It falls from a height of 200 feet and its foam reaches 15 miles away. No scaly finny creature could survive therein. Yet Confucius saw an old man go in. Thinking the old man was suffering from some trouble and was therefore desirous of ending his life, Confucius bade a disciple run along the bank to try to save him. The old man emerged about 100 paces off, and with flowing hair he went caroling along the bank. Confucius followed him, and when he caught up with him, he said, "I had thought, sir, you were a spirit, but now I see you are a man. Kindly tell me, is there any way to deal thus with the water?" It looked almost impossible to Confucius that this big waterfall, the river falling from the height of 200 feet and creating so much foam that it spreads over 15 miles, and an old man going there to take his bath, to bathe in the river. It is impossible. The tremendous energy of the waterfall will kill the man. He will not be able to come back out. He will be forced in the river to the rocks, to the very bottom. First he thought that this man must be going to commit suicide, because you cannot come alive out of this waterfall. So he told a disciple to go by the bank and try to save him. But the man jumped, and then a few paces away he came out of the river perfectly alive. It was unbelievable. Why? For Confucius it is unbelievable because he believes in fight. He does not know how to flow with nature. That is the joke in it. He does not know. He may be knowing all the rules and regulations how to swim, but he does not know how to flow with the river. He does not know surrender, the secret of it. So he couldn't believe his eyes. He thought this man must be a spirit. Physical body cannot survive. It is against all rules. He ran away with the man. When he got hold of him, he asked, "I had thought, sir, you were a spirit, but now I see you are a man. Kindly tell me, is there any way to deal thus with the water? You have done a miracle. It is unbelievable. Is there a certain way to deal thus with the water?" Confucius believes always in ways, methods, techniques, the way. And this is how the ego believes. There are people who come to me and they say, "How to fall in love? Is there a way? How to fall in love?" They ask for a way, a method, certain technique. They don't understand what they are asking. Falling in love means that now there is no way, no technique, no method. That's why it is called falling in. You are no more the controller. You simply fall in. That's why people who are very head-oriented, they will say, "Love is blind." Love is the only eye, the only vision. But they will say that love is blind, and they will think this man has gone mad. It looks mad for reason, because the reason is a great manipulator. Anything in which the control is lost looks dangerous for the reason. So Confucius asks for the way, how you behave with the river. How you survived, sir? There must be some technique. This is the technique-oriented mind, the mind that creates all technologies in the world. But there is a world of human heart, and there is a world of human being and consciousness where no technology is possible. All technologies are possible with the matter. With consciousness, no technologies are possible. In fact, no control is possible. The very effort to control or to make a thing happen is egoistic. Confucius doesn't know that there is something like surrender. If you have been a lover of rivers, and if you have been swimming in rivers, you will understand what that old man said. I myself have loved rivers very much. And to fall in a whirlpool is one of the most beautiful experiences. In rivers, particularly when they are flooded in the rains, many whirlpools are created, very powerful and strong. The water moves round and round like a screw. If you are caught in it, you will be pulled towards the bottom. And the deeper you go, the more stronger the will becomes. The natural tendency of the ego is to fight with it. Of course, because it looks like death. And the ego is very much afraid of death. The ego tries to fight with the will. And if you fight with the will in a flooded river or near a waterfall where many wills exist, you are lost. Because the will is very strong. You cannot fight with it. Violence won't do. And the more you fight with it, the more weaker you become. Because the will goes on pulling you. And you are fighting. With each effort to fight, you are losing energy. Soon you will be tired. And the will suck you downwards. This is the phenomena of will. On the surface, the will is big. And the deeper you go, the will becomes smaller and smaller. It's stronger, but it's smaller. And nearly at the bottom, the will is so small, you can simply get out of it with no fight. In fact, the will itself throws you out near the bottom. But you have to wait for the water. If you start fighting on the surface, you are done. You cannot survive. I have tried with many wills. The experience is lovely. And it is exactly as it happens in deep meditation. Because there also you fight. When your inner being yawns and the abyss opens, it is just like a will. If you start fighting, then you will be crushed. You have to allow it. You simply move with it. You don't fight. You simply move with it. Wherever it leads, you go. You preserve your energy. Not a single iota of energy is lost. Because you are not fighting, you are moving with the will. You are enjoying the whole phenomena. As if you are on the wings of the will, flying. Within a second you are pulled to the bottom, because it is such a tremendous force. It kills many people. And once near the bottom, you can simply slip out of it. Even there is no need to slip out of it. You will slip. Because it is so small. It cannot contain you. The same exactly happens in deep meditation. You feel suffocated. You feel in the grip of something. Possessed. Being pulled to some magnetic force, you start fighting and resisting. If you resist, then only your energy will be sucked. Jesus says a very unbelievable thing, and Christians have been at a loss how to interpret it for these 2,000 years. And they have not been able to interpret it. Jesus says, resist not evil. Even if it is evil, don't resist. Because if you resist, the evil will win over. You are such a tiny energy. Resist not. In the very fight you will be defeated. Don't fight and nobody can defeat you. Even the very evil force, the devil, may be there. If you don't fight, he cannot defeat you. If you start fighting, you are already defeated. Fight and the failure is absolutely certain. Don't fight and there is no possibility to fail. Because how you can fail if you don't fight? This is the art of judo and jiu-jitsu. Not to fight. In Japan, they have developed a very subtle art of judo. The man who is trained in judo cannot be defeated because he doesn't fight. Even if you hit him, he absorbs the energy that you throw by your hitting. He doesn't resist. He doesn't fight. And within minutes, even a very strong person can be defeated by a very weak person if he knows judo. You many times observe it happening all around. You see every day small children falling the whole day. They fall and they get up and they forget about it. But if you fall like a small child, you will always be in the hospital then. What happens when a child falls? He simply falls. He doesn't resist. He moves with the pull, with the gravitation. He simply falls, like a pillow falling. No resistance. When you fall, you resist. You first try not to fall. All your fibers, all your bones become tense and strained. When strained bones and the strained nervous system falls unwillingly, fighting, then many things are broken. Not because of gravitation, but because of your resistance. You sometimes see a drunkard falling on the street, lying down in the gutter, and nothing. By the morning he is absolutely okay, goes to the office. And every night he falls. He must be knowing some trick that you don't know. What he knows? Simply this, that he is so drunk, he cannot resist. He cannot resist. He falls simply like a feather. Drops down with no inner resistance and fight. That's why in the morning he is absolutely okay, again laughing and going to the office. You fall like a drunkard. Immediately you will have to be transported to the hospital. Many fractures would have happened. Those fractures happen because of your fight. In judo, they train the person not to fight. Somebody attacks you, you simply absorb the attack. He hits you on your head, you absorb. Because when somebody is hitting on your head, a certain amount of energy has come to his hand. If you fight, then two energies fight and are destroyed. If you don't fight, you become receptive. Very difficult art. It takes many years to learn it, because the ego again and again comes in. Once you have known the knack of it, then you simply absorb the energy of the enemy. And soon, just by throwing his energy, he becomes weak. And by you become stronger. He is defeated by his own effort. And you win with no effort. This is what the old man said. He said, "No," replied the man, "I have no way." Plunging in with the will. With the will, not against the will. plunging in with the will, I have come out with the will. I have no way. It is all that is done by the will and the will. I don't come in. I move with. Plunging in with the will, I have come out with the will. I accommodate myself to the water, not the water to me. This is the solution of all human problems. The ego is trying to accommodate the whole world to it. This is the trouble. A man who has no ego accommodates himself to the world. In fact, it is not good to say that he accommodates. He simply finds that he is accommodated. The ego tries to accommodate everything to it. This is very childish, just like a child. The child wants everything should be done instantly. Whatsoever he desires should be done immediately. If he desires for the moon should be produced immediately, right now. He cannot even wait. And the child wants everything, everybody to accommodate to him. A child is a dictator. And whenever a child is born in a homely, in a family, he changes the whole atmosphere. He makes everybody a servant. And his dictatorship has no end. And the ego is born in that childhood. Ego is the most immature phenomena. It is childish, immature, not knowing what you are doing. Who are you? Why the whole should accommodate to you? You are just like a wave on the ocean and trying so that the ocean accommodates to you. Foolish, patently foolish. There is no need for the whole to accommodate to you. And it cannot be possible. It is not possible. You can go on thinking about it, but you will be a failure. Ego is always a failure because the impossible is asked. Napoleons, Hitlers, Alexanders asked them. In the end, they are great failures. Rich people ask them in the end. They have accumulated much, but they feel a deep failure inside. Power you can accumulate in many ways, but you will be a failure. Ego never can be victorious. Mullah Nasruddin was telling a story to his child. I was also listening. And the child was insisting, so he invented a story. And he said there was an early riser worm. So he went in Brahmahurt early in the morning, thinking that religious and moral teachers have always said that early rising is beautiful. But he was caught by early riser bird because he was also a believer of religious precepts that to rise early is good. And the child was very much excited. And he said, what happened to the other worm? You said one worm, early riser, and the other? He said, yes, he was a late riser. Very lazy. But a child found him asleep and killed him. The child was a little confused. He said, what is the motto of this story? and said, Nasruddin Moto, you cannot win. Whatsoever you do, early rise or not, in the end, everybody is killed. This is absolutely true about the ego. You cannot win. Whatsoever you do, be virtuous, good, but if this virtue and goodness is based on the ego, you cannot win. You have the very seed of defeat in you. You can serve people, become a great servant of the society, but if the ego is the base, you cannot win. You may do millions of good things, but if the ego is there, the poison is there, it will poison everything that you do. Be poor, be rich, be religious, be irreligious, theist, atheist, moral, immoral, criminal, a saint, doesn't matter. You can't win if the ego is there, because the ego is the seed of failure. And if the ego is not there, you cannot be defeated, because there is nobody to be defeated. Your victory is absolute. This is the secret most teaching of Zen. Be in accord with the whole. Move with the whole, with the river. Don't even swim. People try to swim against the current. And then they are defeated. Don't even swim. Can't you float? Can't you just allow the river to take you? Allow the river. You just move with. Relax with the river of life and let it move you. It reaches to the ocean. You need not bother. The old man said, I accommodate myself to the water, not the water to me. This should become a constant remembrance. A constant mindfulness of it will help you tremendously. Whenever you feel that you are fighting, relax. Whatsoever the case, you float. You don't fight. And then the goal is certain. In fact, then there is no goal in the future. Right now, this very moment, you have attained it. Flowing with nature, loose and natural, allowing nature to take its own course, not forcing it in any way. Remaining passive, not aggressive and violent. Just like a small child who is going for a walk with his father. Wherever the father goes, the child simply is going with the father, happy, not knowing where he is going, why he is going. Even if the father is going to kill the child, there is no problem for the child. There is a Christian story. One man thought that he has been ordered by God to kill his son. He took the son, and the son was very much excited. Early in the morning they had to leave. And the son was awake by the midnight, and he would say, Father, when we are going? And the father is troubled, because he is going to kill the son. in the forest. And the son is so excited. And the son doesn't know what is going to happen. But the man believed in the voice of God, his own father, the man believed. And the child believes in his father. There was trust. The father took the child and the child was very happy. He had never been taken to the forest. And then the father started sharpening the sword by which he is going to kill. And the child is very much excited and he is helping. And the father is crying inside because he knows this child doesn't know that what is going to happen. And then the child asks, what are you going to do with this? And the father says, you don't know, I'm going to kill. And the child laughs and he enjoys and he says, when? And he is ready. This is what means floating with. And the father took the sword and the child is leaning in front of him, happy, smiling. It is a game. I don't know whether this story is true or not, but seems to be true, should be true, carries a deep meaning. Just in the mid, the voice was heard, stop, you trusted me and that's enough. And the child is saying, why you have stopped? Do it. It is a good play. The child is in a playful mood. When you trust life, you trust God. Because life is God and there is no other God. When you trust and float with it, even death is transformed. Then there is no death. Because you never tried to exist separately, so how you can die? The whole always lives. Only individuals come and go. Waves come and go, the ocean goes on and on and on. If you don't believe in yourself as a separate wave, ego, then how you can die? You will live always and always. In the whole, you lived before when you were not. You are living right now when you think you are, and you will live again when you will not. You will not be there. The dream of your being separate is the ego, and the ego creates conflict. Through conflicts you dissipate and die. Through conflict you are miserable. Through conflict you lose all that was possible to you. Millions of blessings are possible for you. The benediction. Every moment is possible. Every moment the ecstasy is possible, but you miss. You miss because you are a fighter. The man says, I accommodate myself to the water, not the water to me, and so I am able to deal with it after this fashion. But it is not a method. It is not a technique, not a way. It is an understanding. And remember, finally, either ego can exist or understanding. Both cannot exist together. If the ego exists, you have no understanding. You are just an ignorant child believing that you are the center of the whole. And finding that it is not so, you are miserable. Finding that you are not the center, you create your hell. Understanding means understanding the whole situation. Simply looking at the whole phenomena of your life, inner and outer, and ego disappears. With understanding there exists no ego. Understanding is the path, the way. Then you are in accord, in harmony, in rhythm, in step with life. Then suddenly you come to feel, you plunge with the will and you come out with the swill. And this game is eternal. Plunging with the will, coming out with the swill. This is the eternal game. That's what Hindus have called Leela, the great cosmic play. You come sometimes as a wave and then you disappear. Then again you come as a wave and you disappear. And this goes on and on. There is no beginning to it and no end to it. The ego has a beginning. The ego has an end. But you, without the ego, are beginningless, endless. You are the very eternity. But in the whole, with akaj, with the whole, against the whole, you are a nightmare to yourself. So either the ego or the understanding, choice is yours. There is no need to be humble, just understanding. And as if you have lighted a candle in a dark room, and suddenly the darkness is not there, because light and darkness cannot exist together. Ego and understanding cannot exist together. Enough for today.